Welcome to Burning the Ships podcast. I'm your host, Jason Seward, and today we've got a very good buddy of mine, Tyrone Taylor. Tyrone is someone I've met, like many of my guests, through a mastermind we're both in. I've known him for a couple years now, and one thing that stands out, and you guys will hear this in the interview, like Tyrone is, for all the time I've known him and been around him several times at different events and stuff like that, and hung out with him and talked to him quite a bit. But recording this interview with him, it was the first time I learned a lot of stuff about him, because he is so humble, and every conversation I've had with him or been around when he's having with the others, he's always asking about the other person, right? He's not leading with talking about himself. So it was exciting for me to kind of dive into his story a little bit and hear it from his perspective and his perspectives around a lot of different things. Before we get into it, we'll do JJ's joke of the week. And this week it is, why does the hurricane have such bad vision? Because it only has one eye. And that is JJ's joke of the week. So, like I said, we got my buddy Tyrone on here this week, burning the ships with me. I think y'all will enjoy his story. He's a masterclass in resilience and just building something through a lot of turmoil and adversity, and really just keeping forward focus and pushing through all that to now with what he's got going on in real estate and everything else. A great father, a great husband, a great entrepreneur, and I'm excited to introduce you all to Tyrone. So let's get it going. Tyrone Taylor, welcome to Burning the Ships, my man.
Thanks for having me, my brother. It's good to see you, man.
Good to see you too, dude. I know you're fresh off, well, when this comes out, it'll be a little ways after, but you're fresh off a trip with the family to Hawaii, aren't you?
Well, man, I'm still readjusting.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Y'all went down there with Legacy Family, which unfortunately that was the first trip I've missed with Legacy since I've been in for about 3 years now. And not the one I wanted to miss, but we just had so much going on at home. I couldn't make it work. So
I hear you, man. That's a long trip, man. It was and definitely a risky one for us. We're, flying 13 hours. So 12 hours from Philly to layover in LAX. And then we had our layover and then, so 6 and 6, and we got 6-year-old and a 1-year-old. So yeah, it was a gamble.
Well, y'all pulled it off in your back, so that's good. So, I was missing, before we started recording, I was telling you my wife and I went there. We were in Maui in 2019. I was telling you we had that like legit conversation sitting on the beach, like we could live here, like we need to move to this place, but kids and work and all that stuff brought us home. So, but. But no, man, I'm happy to have you on. I know we've been back and forth trying to get this on the calendar for a while. And I'm happy to introduce you to our listeners. And you have an interesting story, so I can't wait to get into all that. But we'll kind of kick things off, Tyrone, I'll turn it over to you and just introduce yourself, who you are, where you're from, kind of a little bit about your story, and then we'll get right into it.
Yeah, man, for sure. Appreciate it. So I'm born and raised in Philadelphia. I'm on the East Coast, same as you, but a little north of you. I grew up in Philadelphia. Growing up in the hood, as you might call it, right? Just you kind of came from not very much on the financial side of things. Like my parents like struggled a lot when we were coming up. And that's definitely like kind of molded me into who I am and why I do what I do as an entrepreneur and in real estate and all that stuff, which we'll get into, I'm sure. But coming up and, just grew up in a household, I was the youngest of five. We were rich in a lot of things, just money was not one of them, right? So, my dad was kind of a blue collar guy growing up, watched him work like a lot of like blue collar labor jobs for years of my life. Like he was working at a pharmaceutical like manufacturing plant in Northeast Philly. Just going through that experience and like coming up in that realm where like my parents just worked their asses off like nonstop, right? It was like multiple jobs sometimes and and just doing what they needed to do to make things happen, put food on the table. But we were happy, right? They were just like grounded in, like provide for the family. They were active in our community, like active in the church. Like they donated. I don't know where the money came from, but they donated to causes that they believe in. We'd be like, "Mom, what are you crazy? Like we don't even have like." Through all that, like the one thing that really stuck with me growing up is the fact they never complain about anything, right? Especially my dad, like working the graveyard shift, like. You know, I drop with mom to drop him off at work sometimes. And, you know, he's going to the plant and it's late at night. And if I didn't have school the next day, it's a Saturday or something. And I'd go back, take the ride to pick him up 8 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, you could tell he's dead tired, exhausted, and still, you know, greet us with a smile and just like, "Hey, what's going on?" And it was just like another day. And at the time growing up, like I didn't realize like how impactful that was, right? The lessons I was learning in that, it was just like normal for me. But now as I've matured and realized like how much like the man that he was to be able to do that and lead by that example, like, you know, it's one of the things I'm most grateful for. So, you know, kind of same side or other side of it, my mom, she was the entrepreneur of the family. So, coming up, she was like involved in several different businesses. Like she always instilled in us like the power of just pursuing your own destiny and just living life on your own terms. She's always tell us like, "You're capable of doing this on your own. If you want to do it, you could build something. Like you don't have to go work for somebody else and accept what they'll pay you and just like just live the rest of your life that way. Like you can, you know, you could build something." So she'd always talk about like, you know, you got to own assets, right? You got to own assets and you got to invest in yourself and you got to learn this stuff and it's out here and it's available for you. So kind of the interesting dynamic between those two examples is a lot of like kind of what led me to be who I am today, right?
Dude, you're hitting on something that is so important. Like your two examples, the people that influenced who you are in a lot of ways were a mixture of blue collar mindset and entrepreneurial spirit. And you combine those two things, which you have, what a freaking powerhouse, man. So I didn't realize that about your story, but yeah, carry on. I just wanted to make a point that's a powerful blend of influence.
Thanks, man. Even as you say that, I've never even thought about it that way. So that's interesting. Like, yeah. You know, kind of that combination. But so I ended up kind of growing up in the high school, I became a little bit of a computer nerd. Really enjoyed like tinkering on, you know, computers, kind of taking them apart, putting them back together. So this is like 90s. I graduated high school 2001. And even before that, I always had like an engineering mind, right? My older brothers, like cousins, like they always were the type like work on their own cars. So we're like rebuilding stuff and tearing stuff apart and, you know, doing tune ups and all that kind of stuff. So like I kind of came up in that and just like learn how to work on stuff with my hands. And then I became really interested in computers. And then that became like my thing that I wanted to work on. So started like tinkering with programming and all that, like in the late 90s. And this is during like kind of the .com era, right? Yep. When you have like these .com companies getting these like massive valuations we'd never seen in history. It was like, whoa. So I just thought like, all right, I'm going to pursue something having to do with computers because that's where all the money is. And kind of combining my love for computers with kind of the entrepreneurial side of things, I don't even know if I knew what it really meant back then, but I just said, I'm going to own a business that produces computer programs for business owners. Like it was just like in my head, right?
This was in high school, you said? So like late 90s? Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So graduated 2001, went to school, actually moved not too far from Philly and where I live now, Westchester, Pennsylvania, about an hour outside the city. And ended up going to school, majoring in computer science, and kind of worked my way through college. Like the first few semesters, I took out loans and all that, but like, coming up the way that we did, like, so that kind of blue collar mindset, we looked at like loans as the enemy. It's like, you know, you're trying to do pay for things in cash, and you're like, I don't want to put things on credit because that's how you get messed up and you'll never get ahead and blah, blah, blah. So I like worked my way through school, like kind of doing whatever I could, like customer service jobs. I managed a gas station for a period, worked at QVC, which is kind of big around here, and just kind of doing whatever I needed to do to make as much money as possible and like chip away at the bills as like they were coming through. Mixed up in that, I got, you know, ended up bouncing at like pretty much had maybe half the bars like around here, for a number of years. And I ended up being able to land a position at a Vanguard, in their retirement business like section. And I was still in school when I got that job, and technically you're supposed to have a degree, but I kind of was able to get my footing in by being a contractor through a temp agency, and then kind of work my way into the company through there. So I had to go and take the test, get my Series 6 and 63 and all that. And that was like the turning point, or one of the turning points in my life, where like I started to kind of fall in love with finance a bit. And it wasn't necessarily like finance, it was more so investing. And I knew that I didn't want to have a career in that, but I just wanted to know as much as I needed to in order to like be dangerous at it. So, right. You know, in my mind, I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to be a business owner. I'm going to own multiple companies and I'm going to have all this money one day. I should learn how to manage it. So that's kind of what led me into that. Kind of fast forward a bit, when I got out of school, got my first job as a software engineer, and did that for not even a year before I was unceremoniously laid off from that job. They had kind of hit a little bit of a rough patch after 2008. This is around 2007, 2008. So for whatever reasons that led to it, they were downsizing a little bit. And I was like new guy on the streets. And it was like kind of last in, first out type situation. Yep. Look, we like you, you know what I mean? We believe in you, but it's not going to work out. Like, we got to take a different direction.
I'm like, it's not you, it's me, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm like devastated. I'm, you know, at that point, I'm it's funny to look at now, because it's not like I had, you know, I wasn't married and have kids and a whole bunch of responsibilities. But to me, I'd made a step into like, all right, I'm stepping into what I've been building up to all this time. And then just kind of flatlined, right? At the same time, it also kind of brought back to me all those talks with my mom when I was coming up. It's like, you need to control your own destiny. Like, you can't, you know, you can't place all your trust in other people to take care of you. The employer, you got to like build for yourself. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm supposed to be doing, right? So this is 2008, and I ended up meeting and getting close with a couple of guys who were scientists. One was a scientist, well, they both were scientists. One, the microbiologist, and my other partner, Bob, he was also on the IT side, but they were developing a new company that was based around developing clean infrastructure. And I started to get, you know, knowledgeable about what they were doing. And other friends, mutual friends that knew Charles and I, they were just like, you guys, you should talk, because I think you guys kind of have a similar mindset. You would probably, you know, really, you know, resonate with each other on some things. So started working with them as kind of a consultant on the research side, and bringing some of my like software experience to helping them and what they were doing. And I just fell in love with it. All right. So the early days back then, we were mainly working with farmers and food processing companies. So, you know, this guy coming from Philly, grew up in pretty much concrete jungle. I'm then working on farms. Like, I'm going out, we're meeting with farmers, where I'm in shit pits collecting waste samples. You know what I mean? We're bringing them back to the lab. Charles and the other scientists that we're working with, they are like analyzing these things, and they're pulling the microbes out of them. And I just saw the connection between what I was doing and the bigger impact that it could have to solve like the waste management issues in the farming community. So I became like very passionate about that. I still own that business today, but it's more of a consulting company where we work with other land and facility owners who are trying to like build their facilities. Back then, we were actually designing to build the facilities ourselves, which is a lot more of a big boy game. And that comes with risks that we would later on learn very clearly. Yeah, so that was 2008, call 2009. We ended up developing a waste energy facility, the first phase of it in Lancaster County, PA. We ended up getting that facility patented for our waste processing, like the processes and everything that we designed into it. So we have several patents on that facility. And at that point, we are building this as a model that we're just basically going to stamp, starting in kind of the mid-Atlantic region where we are, but obviously the runoff issues associated with farming waste being like a nationwide and even worldwide problem. So we're like, all right, we start here. It was like a multi 8-9 figure business plan, and it was we were off to the races. Fast forward 3, 4, or 5 years later, we're in 2014, 2015, and we hit some pretty big challenges in that business with some facilities that we were working on. A lot of that, as you know, and I know you know a lot about the farming industry and all that, but utilities, energy, that's like big business, right? And so much of that is outside of, was outside of our control to the degree where we had projects that were in the pipeline and we were just getting smashed for like zoning, I mean, things we couldn't get approved. Investors pulling out on us, kind of in the ninth and tenth hour and just leaving us, kind of with our hands up, like we made all these commitments. What do we do now? And just several other things like that happened a few times. And then I found myself in a different place because I was a business owner and it seemed like I, built some success for myself. But then remembering where I was when I transitioned out of IT, feeling helpless again. It was like, I own it now, but I still don't control, what's going to happen to me. My wife and I were getting ready to get married at that point. We're talking about, the family we want to create and our vision for the future and all that. And I just realized that I can't build it on a business that's so kind of susceptible to like outside influence, right? The industry has a little shift or regulations change or anything, and then we're dead in the water. So again, my mom comes back to me, in my head, you gotta own assets, you gotta have something to fall back on. And funny enough, my mom had taken me to my first real estate investing conference. I don't remember what year it was, but I'm pretty sure I was either in eighth or ninth grade, at the Philadelphia Convention Center. So real estate was like at the top of all the things she ever talked about. And I just knew like, this is it. Like I need to build a portfolio of assets that will sustain my family regardless of what happens. And until I'm able to have that to fall back on, I'm just not going to feel secure whether I'm working for somebody else or not. Being in a more mature position, obviously, no, it was extremely risky business that we were in. But, being naive at that time to like other businesses that had more security in them, I just saw like, look, if I don't, if there's not some store of value somewhere that kick off cash flow and it's there for us, I can't trust it. And that was when we kind of launched into real estate in 2015.
Gotcha.
So,
So
yeah.
let's pause on the timeline there, because I got some questions going back to your mom. Where did that entrepreneurial spirit come from? Did she have an influence in her life that led her down that mindset or that path? And I'm just curious, because that's not a natural mindset. Like, typically it comes from being a part of something or having a mentor. So do you know where that came from in her life?
That's a great question, and I don't, being so I know, she her mother passed when she was relatively young, so she was like mostly raised by her grandmother. I know her father was not like in her life, So it's not like she had like an example where this was like kind of passed down to her or she grew up in it. It was just, you know, as far back as I can remember, as young as I was, my mom was just a hustler.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of times I see like that can come from, if you didn't have a mentor, you might have life circumstances that a lot of people this happens to where they go through a lot of struggles. Like you mentioned, like her mom wasn't around, dad wasn't around, she lived with the grandma. That's hardship, right? And that's a lot of adversity that she had no control over. So that can lead to a mindset of, no, I'm going to take control over my life with that mindset of, I need to think like an entrepreneur. I need to build things on my own and not rely on somebody else. So you saying that probably is where that mindset came from. And you as her son, and you said you had four siblings, right? It was five of y'all.
Yeah.
You probably wanted to instill at a very early age into all of y'all, like, this is how you think. Like, y'all are, I may not be here to take care of you. Your dad may not be here to take care of you. You need to learn to take care of yourself. So would you agree that might be some of it?
Great perspective on that.
Yeah.
Great perspective on that. Her not having that, you know, to back her up, just being like, you have to build it for yourself. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And you touched on something else, and that I can definitely relate to this because, like, you, as you were talking about the early ages and your dad working so hard and, you know, but always having that smile on his face. I guess the way I can relate to that is my dad wasn't around. You know, he was out of my life at an early age, about when I was 8 or 10, and then kind of in and out thereafter. But my mom was the way your dad was, in the sense that she worked her ass off. It was her and us three kids. We had no money, but I never knew it. I never felt it. Now I know she would go in her room at night and cry. And I know that she would just, there's so much stress on her, but in front of us, she made us believe that we were the richest kids on the block, you know, or in our county. And man, that has power. Like that influence on young kids to know, and what it taught me and what I'm able to take from that and apply to my life today, as I know you are as well, that there, like, it was tough back then. And now looking back on it, I can see how tough it is. And we got through it with smiles on my face. So any adversity that comes to me through business or personally, or just a hard day, or I get a flat tire, I can laugh it off because I've been through way worse, right?
Yeah.
It kind of, in a way, it calibrates your perspective on life going through that, right? And do you feel the same way?
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I'd say through that, you know, you're built different, right?
Yeah.
And
right.
I feel the same for myself. It's just like the way I tend to look at things, like if I don't die, I'm going to figure it out, right?
Yeah.
So shit didn't kill me, like we'll be all right. Like we'll make
it. Yeah. I had a guest on a couple months ago said, I love this, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said, we're sitting here having this conversation. We're breathing. That means we have made it through 100% of the things we faced in life, right? If you're breathing, you're batting 1,000 on life, right? So, you know, I mean, that was a interesting perspective, and I've been thinking about it a lot lately. Like, I'm breathing. That's, if you're breathing, you're winning. And so we keep moving on and keep on doing better. So, all right, so let's go back to 2015. And now you're starting to get into real estate. So what did that look like at that point?
So that was, so back then, you know, it still is now, but especially back then, it was like a constant stream of just like HGTV ruled the airways, right?
Yeah,
I don't even know the names of the flipper flops and whatever else it was. So my wife and I, we didn't watch TV. We watched HGTV when it was on. It was like, and we were like, we didn't realize we were studying the market, but we were always just looking at the market and just seeing, wow, that sold for that. We were like genuinely interested in how much things were, you know, were transacting for, even though we weren't like ready to buy anything, right? We lived in a one bedroom apartment back then. And my wife was a high school English teacher. And our goal was to get into real estate. We did not have a clear picture as to how that would go out, but we just knew we wanted to eventually own apartment buildings. And that was just what we associated with having wealth for some reason, right? The things, it was like, all right, well, we're just gonna figure out how to get into this and flip houses and make some money. And then eventually we're gonna start buying, you know, houses and eventually buy buildings. And it was just kind of in our minds. We're like, you know, no mentorship or really having a set path. We're just like, had an idea of what we thought we knew based on watching a bunch of TV. So
now, did you still have revenue or income coming in from the business at this point?
I did. It was little.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
It was not sustainable. We had periods where things were good and we have projects rolling and we're kicking, you know, cash is coming in and we're paying ourselves. And then we had times where things tightened up.
Right.
And it was like, all right, you know, the partners, we come together and we're like, all right, we're going to shut down payroll, stop paying ourselves because we're going to reinvest everything in this project. Right. And we want to get this project through. We just got to fund it for the next, you know, 8-12 months, get it through pre-development. And once we get there, then, you know, we'll go, the finance will come through, we'll reimburse ourselves pre-development. So we're playing that game, right? It's a long game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we had a couple of those, you know, one very big one blow up as well. Like, bunch of money in, we're not paying ourselves, you know, over a year, and then project goes away, right?
Yeah. That's the opposite of income.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we ended up, we started going out, attending seminars and doing that kind of thing. And we ended up landing in one, and a very convincing one that we ended up paying pretty high ticket price to get into one of those training programs. It was 27 grand back then. And 27 grand we didn't have, you know, we're making it month to month and putting money together and figuring that out. And, you know, it's one of those things, you can wholesale houses, you can flip houses. We're going to show you how to do it. And you'll make double that back on your first deal. And we're weary, you know, kind of, I don't know about all that, if we should do this. And we go sit through like their weekend long pre-training thing. And then they sell you on the big package. And we made a decision like, all right, you know what? Let's just do it. Let's take the leap. Not to say I would do that again.
Right.
But the one thing it did do, I mean, I did learn some stuff, but $27,000 for a week of training is a you know, ton of money. And we know what their business model is. But it was, for me, just it put us in a place where I knew, like, this has to succeed. Then it becomes like a, like, you know, you put so much on yourself. And I was like, this, I thought about real estate. This is no longer optional. Now I have this money and like, this is debt now that, you know, we got to dig ourselves out of. So then I have a chip on my shoulder, kind of like, I not only got to make our money back, like, now this has to be super successful because I was dumb enough to put down that much cash. And we just went out and hit it hard. We were, you know, marketing, trying to wholesale properties. That was our first kind of game plan. You know, they teach you, you know, you can make money with no credit, no money, and without owning it, and blah, 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 all the wholesale kind of selling points. So we were like, all right, that sounds good. You know, make 10, 15 grand in 2 weeks. That took, I don't know, maybe 7-8 months where the first deal came through.
Right.
So that was just all about persistence, grit, man. You know, just mailers, you know, week after week after week. I've heard my wife used to come home from school teaching. She's dead exhausted. She'd been up since 6 a.m. and we're just sitting there watching HGTV, just, you know, licking and stamping postcards, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just pulling down lists from, like, I think it was like List Source back then. And I'm cold calling, you know, did not have like a background in sales, but I'm just following the scripts and I'm like just trying to figure it out. Eventually it started to kind of come together. We got, you know, contract, we got one closed eventually. And, that rolled into us starting to flip a few deals a few years later, 2-3 years later. It's like mid 2017. we got approached by a friend of ours back then who owned a Remax brokerage. And he's like, look, I see you guys are doing this. You're growing. Like, I think you'd be really good at property management. I'm starting a property management division. And I'm trying to grow it because he was trying to keep his investment clients in-house, right? So he's managing properties for investors. They're buying them from other firms that have management in-house and they're jumping ship. So, you know, we talked about it and we're like, all right, I don't know, you know, I don't really want to work for you though, right? How about we joint venture and we start a management company, right? So that's what we did. And we ended up getting deep in the management space between like 2017 to 2021 when we exited that business. But it was like kind of like learn through a fire hose, right? And then business through a fire hose and everything through a fire hose because we were just soaking up a lot of management business from the other companies in our area. We were primarily focused in North Philly. And when you're wholesaling, you're flipping, and you got the management, like our business was being driven by the investors we were serving, right? So I own my business, but really I'm working for these guys.
Right. It goes back to the same thing you said before. Like you're dependent upon something else in order for you to survive in your business.
Yeah. And it's funny how you be at different points. You're like, I've stepped up and then did the same, you know, I've stepped up into a new form of a job, even though it's my business now.
Yep.
So the guys that were our biggest clients were primarily like just buying up sections of Philly. They were focused on like soaking up college student rentals. So we ended up building our management business around that. So at the height of it, we were managing about 350 something units for 40 clients, and like 80% of them were like college students. So it was like Temple University, Drexel U in Philadelphia, and then we kind of had some scattered out in the suburbs. But if you could imagine most of your tenants, you know, you got hundreds of tenants, and then each one of these houses, we have, you know, 3, 4, 5 different students, yep. right? So it's like they're all rooming houses, a lot of them.
And these are tenants that do not give a crap about that place they're living in.
Yeah.
I was a college student one time living in an apartment, renting it. So I know how that goes. So.
Yeah. So, you know, your tenants are addicted to drugs and alcohol.
Right. right.
So that was crazy. You know, it was, I wouldn't give it back for anything, you know, because I learned so much through that yep. period. I feel like it really positioned me in real estate to be comfortable kind of just taking on almost anything because I felt like I had seen the worst of it, right?
Yeah.
And we had wild things. Like we had tenants get killed, unfortunately, back then. We had like cars run in through how like all the worst calls you could imagine ever getting, like in the middle of the night.
Yep.
Like we had.
I'll pause you for a second. Were you still buying property yourself at this time, or was it 100% focused on the management company?
Pretty much like 100% focused. Okay. And we had picked up the units that we picked up. We were flipping and selling. We were trying to get the cash flow. We picked up one unit during the time we were managing.
Got it.
One property we still have, but that ended up being kind of the realization that we had a few years later. And it was after COVID. So we're after at least the core part of COVID. So it's like late 2020. And we came together and it's like, so my wife, myself, my partner, Bryce, who had joined us early on in the company. And we're like, we're killing ourselves. This is stupid. And we don't own any of this stuff. Right. We got into it to own our own assets and it's never going to happen like this. And ironically or coincidentally, we were also in the process of doing a bunch of tax assessment. We were challenging tax assessments for our management clients. So Philly yep. kind of rolled out a new assessment on some areas of the city and they hit North Philly and then everybody's taxes like jumped like crazy, like 50%, 75% doubled. And my partner says, hey, why don't we, you know, to challenge this, all you got to do, submit this form And you got to submit comps, and then we can get their taxes knocked down, and we just charge them flat fee. So we go through and we're doing that. And I'm actually looking at these properties that these guys had bought, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago. And they bought them for $150, $175, and we've been managing them for them. And they're leased up at $500 a bedroom, $600 a bedroom. So it's like, I'm sending this guy, you know, $800 a month, $1,000 a month for this property. It's now worth $250. It's been 4 years. I did all the work, right? So that was like kind of the light bulb went off, and went to our RE/MAX partner and said, hey, man, you know, we had a good run, but this ain't for me. Like, we can't keep doing this. We're never going to accomplish our vision, run everybody else's stuff. So negotiated an exit, got far less than, you know, I would have if I wanted to fight for it. But it was like, look, you know, I'm disrupting the business model. We knew we had the long-term plan to kind of ride it out. I just want my time and my energy back to be able to focus on what I really want to do. So we took what we could get, got out of it. And then at that point, we decided we're not going to manage anything else that we don't own ever again. And we've just been building our portfolio since then. That was like, that was early 2021.
Yeah. I think I met you, first time I met you, I think was in Nashville, which was October of 2022 at a legacy event. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't long after that exit. So mm-hmm. I've got a bunch of questions written down, but I kind of want you to take us to this point. So from that point, now you're all in, you're building your own portfolio. Finally, at a point where you're doing what your mama's been preaching to you since you were a kid, owning assets. So what did it look like over since then through today?
So the earlier days, you know, we came out, we were hungry. And, you know, we had been working double super overtime. So mind you, I still had the other business, the infrastructure, but we're consulting. So it's a lighter load at that point. During that time, my wife and I had our first kid. So my son, couple years old, and just being released from the management company, getting out of that, it felt like I had a new leash on life. Like, I have all this energy, I have all this experience, we've kind of built a decent name for ourselves, like we have a solid network. I'm just gonna soak up whatever I can, right? And I just got out there in the streets and we're hunting for deals, and we ended up picking up our first 32 units in the first year. So that was across a few deals. I think that was what, 1, 12, 8, 3. That was 3 properties. No, 4. Yeah, so we picked up those few deals, and it was, you know, the value add side of things was where we were focused, because that was what we knew, starting out wholesaling and, you know, flipping and doing all that. I'm still kind of a wholesaler at heart when I look at deals. Not getting a deal, it's not my deal. So I went out with that mindset. We were comfortable kind of dealing with the rough stuff from like all the stuff we've been through in property management and flipping properties. So we said, all right, we're going to get to the commercial side of things, you know, get over 5 units. We'll even get those valuations just by increasing the NOI. And we're just going to turn units and push these buildings. And then back then, when interest rates were, you know, ungodly low, we're like, we're just going to fix them up, we're going to burn them. So we're going to burn apartment buildings. So we did that, and, you know, kind of fast forward, we've been doing that, and we picked up other deals along the way, and we got closer to 2023 2024. We started to go through some pretty rough times, so soaking up that many like value add units. Looking back at my management experience, I thought, well, I was managing hundreds of units, but this is nothing. Mm-hmm. But it's a different animal, right? Much different animal. We're buying these old buildings in the Northeast. You know, these are built 1890s, 1900s through 1920, whatever, in C-class areas. And it was not as easy as we thought it was going to be, quite frankly. Like the pro forma, matching reality rarely happens. Like, we learned that very true, very clearly. And we got to a point where cash flow like really we went from having a lot of cash flow in the portfolio, and it dried up. So tenant issues, turnovers, you know, people not paying rent and having issues getting people out. In Philly, kind of stuck us pretty bad on a couple of deals. You know, then reality hit, and that's really been like one of the biggest, I guess, points of maturity for me as an investor over the past 3 years, like just learning the cycles and how to manage and like what it really means to build a sustainable portfolio and how to architect it so that it's sustainable, right? I've learned so much through that, that we got to a point where we're like, all right, now we just got to muscle down and get this done. So we're coming out of pocket. We're like getting units turned over, doing whatever we need to do just to get through. And our hardest year was probably 2023 going into 2024. I'd say up to the middle of last year, we started right. to kind of free up some cash flow a bit, but that was eye opening for me.
I want to point out something that I think, I mean, I keep connecting this back to your parents because I love trying to figure out correlations and stuff like that. So you talk about 2023, early 2024. I was around you several times through that time period.
Yeah.
I had no clue you were going through a tough time in your business. And the point, and I'm not that I should have, but my point there is back to your father showing up after working a night shift with a smile on his face. Mm-hmm. Let's go have fun. Are y'all ready to play? Whatever. Always positive. At the events I saw you at, you were always positive. It was never you. Your default mode is to be genuinely curious about whatever everybody else has going on. You never talked about the troubles you were in, and you did in the right, at the right time, in the right moments when you were given space at like roundtables and stuff to do that. Yeah. But overall, you were happy, you were positive, because that's the influence and the role model that was given to you at an early age. And that allowed you that. So a lot of people would and did crumble during those times, right? A lot of people in the similar shoes as you hit that adversity and ran from it and just threw their hands up. I'm out. I can't handle the stress, and either sold everything, moved on to a different business, went and got a job. You muscled up, like you said, and which is in your nature. And I'm sure your wife is very similar, and y'all gritted your teeth and got through it. And now, because you did, on the other end, things are obviously getting better, correct?
Yeah. Yep, 100%, man, 100%. Yeah. And
I love seeing that resilience, because, I mean, it gives me goosebumps, because so many people, you know, I preach it on here. I try to practice it in my own life, both personally and in business. But so many people give up and throw in the towel right as they're on the brink of a breakthrough, a major breakthrough to what could lead to major success and happiness, but they just give up because they don't have that grit. And you're a great testament to having grit and pushing through. And I really appreciate you sharing the bat. Like, you could have just told that whole story and skipped over all the adversity and just told the highlight reels, you know? And yeah. That's not going to help anybody. That's not going to be a positive influence on anybody. So I appreciate you sharing the vulnerability there, man.
Thanks, man. Yeah. That's, I think that's what it's all about, because that's, you know better than that's what makes us who we are. Right. Mm-hmm. And, it goes back to that thing. Like, if it's not killing me, I'm learning. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like when we connected at the events and we're out and everything, it, to me, it's more important to me that I show up correctly, right? And I show up and I bring positive energy to whatever situation I'm in, and just really double down in like who I am at those times, right? If I let adversity kind of rip me out of who I think I am, and then I become this negative person, or I'm fearful, and all, then I'm not really grounded, you know what I mean? And that is something definitely that my parents' example taught me. And I'm just a very strong proponent of, like, regardless of what you're going through, people will always remember how you showed up and how you made them feel. Right.
No
If I
doubt.
show up like, woe is me, and this is going on, and oh my God, and I don't know what I'm going to do. And it's like, you go home from Nashville and you're like, yeah, it really seemed like cool. Guy's going through a lot of shit, man. I mean, it's terrible. I mean, maybe get that guy a call, make sure he doesn't jump off the deep end. You know what I mean? But,
Right.
you know, the timing is right. We can share, but for me, it's like, I got to put myself in position to actually get the knowledge that I need. Right. So that again is that showing up with positivity and really just trying to make sure that everybody I come into contact with, you know, I'm able to impact positively in some way, even if it's just, you know, a hug.
Yeah.
So yeah,
Yep.
man.
And I want to go back to one thing you said earlier. You touched on it really quick. You paid $27,000 to join that initial thing that y'all dove into. And you said that, you know, you wouldn't do that again today. I'm gonna challenge that a little bit because that might not have been the best use of that money, but what it did is it applied pressure. And you may not have grown through that 1 week training that you did and that 27,000 that like directly that training and that money you spent, that might not have led to all the great things you're doing now. But what it did is I say this all the time, and I used to not believe it, but now I do. You pay attention to what you pay for. So you spending that 27,000 put that pressure on you because you have an ego and you have pride. I'm not wasting this money. So even if it's not directly related to that specific training, it made you come hell or high water, I'm going to make this real estate thing work because I spent money on it. And that's kind of the philosophy I have and the pushback that I give the people that give me, you know, grief about spending money on masterminds and stuff like that. You and I both are in Legacy Family. I'm in a couple other masterminds. I like it's tough to see the ROI on that type of investment, right? It's tough to really pin it down to I spent this much and I got this much out of it. But you know what I get out of it? I get motivated by other people that are going through the same things I am. I get infinite number of mentors and resources. Like if now I'm lending, if I have somebody come to me for a loan in or around Philly, who am I calling to see if this is a good deal to lend on? I'm calling you because it's a resource I have through a mastermind that I spent money on. And I pay attention to everything I'm learning and everything that's offered through this because I'm spending money and applying that pressure. So that 27,000, while the ROI might not have come directly from that training, it sounds like it catapulted everything that came behind it.
You know, man, that's powerful perspective because it's exactly right.
Yeah.
Right. It'd be not to say that I think I'd still be in real estate, right? But would I be where I am if I didn't do that? I honestly can't say, right?
Right.
If I had the space and the freedom to kind of back off a little bit, and not have as much drive to like, I gotta recoup this, and now it's gotta be successful because I did that, then that definitely fueled me through all those tough times, you know what I mean? Getting door slammed in your face 100 times, going home to crying newborn baby and still getting up and going on appointments. Like, yeah, you're exactly right. Cause without that pressure, it's like you have, you know, the option is, well, you know, I don't have to do this as hard, right? Or I
Right.
can go, let me, I'll go try this other thing, which, you know, might bring the cash quicker and I'll get back to real estate when I make some money or something, right?
Right.
Tell you.
So I'm gonna ask you this, and I'm asking at the risk of, you know, she might not be, but is your mother still alive?
She is. She is.
Okay. She's got to be proud of what you've done, man. I mean, like she's preached it to you since she was a kid, taking you to seminars when you were, what'd you say, in 8th grade, going to a real estate seminar. And now, like she, you, I just, you would never say it, but I know without knowing your mother, she's got to look at what you're doing now with so much pride and, you know, yeah. So that kudos to you, man, because that's one of my biggest motivators in life. You know, my kids, my wife, but making my mom proud, right? And I try to do that every day, and I focus on that a lot, you know.
Yeah,
So
hundred
yeah.
percent one.
So let's shift gears. So you walked us through the timeline. You obviously things are good. You got into, you know, through 2024. Now we're into 2025. Things have stabilized for you, and I would imagine things are going good. let's talk about your family. You've got a 6-year-old and a 1-year-old, beautiful wife, beautiful kids. How much do they motivate you? Your story is full of discipline and sticking to just fighting through things and stuff like that. But sometimes you got to have some motivation in life too, right? So I would imagine it's your wife and kids. Talk about them and how powerful they are in your life.
Yeah, I mean they're everything, man. It truly every day I wake up, I go through this exercise. So like I just wake up and I just say what I'm thankful for, right? And I just go through and I don't have a time limit. I just talk until it's like, all right, and then I finish my prayer and they're at the top of the list, right?
Yeah.
It's every single day. It's just remarkable, man. I look at these kids and I'm just it's still kind of surreal. I'm like, damn, we made that, right?
Yeah. Yes, right.
And it's just so cool. And my wife, man, she's been absolute like all-star since we've like just solid, right? Through all the thick, through the thin, through whatever, like she just supported me, believed in my vision, even when she couldn't really see it or understand what I was doing.
Yep.
Going into real estate and I'm gonna do this and she and we got this other bit. She's like, are you losing focus? And I'm like, no, I know this is it. It might not, it might not happen right away, but I know like the future is in this, right? There's a future in this. And she just doubled down with me, like where I think a lot of people might not have, like, just have that confidence. She's always said, like, I believe you can do anything. And, if you see it, then I'm with you and let me know what I need to do. So, man, I thank God for that. Cause I think especially as entrepreneurs, a lot of people, at least from what I hear, like I don't hear a lot of people really connecting like their relationship to like who they've become. And I know that one, me single is not nearly as powerful as me with her, right? And the other side of it is me with someone else who maybe doesn't believe in my vision or believe in me enough to pursue a vision that they can't see. And either one of those, I can't imagine where I'd be. So it's like everything I do for them, man. It's, the tough shit, it all makes it a little better when I just know that when I figure this out, we get on the other side of this, I'm gonna like we're working to being able to live a life where we have the time freedom and the financial freedom for me to spend as much time as I want with them and for us to go wherever we want and just have that like boundless joy together, right? And that just like drives everything. I'm like, all right, if I gotta go through this, whatever it is, there's no question.
Your number, talk about the unit count, talk about the business, the ups and downs. Your number one asset in life is your spouse. Your most important thing to get right is your spouse. And I'm having that same experience that you are with my wife. She's not involved in the real estate side of things. She's a teacher, but she trusts me, and it's unwavering. She never questions a single thing. She trusts me. She's my biggest cheerleader. She supports me. She will defend me if anybody's talking, bad about me. She is my number one supporter and asset in everything I'm doing. And to your point, it's pretty nice, even through the hard times, to come home to a spouse that smiles at you, that hugs you, that loves you, no matter what, even on the bad days. And sometimes you got to have that to get to the next day, right? And I it's powerful, man. I think, it's a cheat code. It's a cheat code to have a powerful spouse both ways, and I try to be that same spouse for her and support all of her dreams and thoughts and let her whatever I can do to make her feel important, because she is, and she does that same thing to me. And because of that, we're being good influences on our children, and y'all are doing the same, So, and one last thing I want to touch on. You are, anybody watching this is only seeing you from the neck up. You are a very fit individual, and clearly you've kept that at the forefront of what you do. And obviously, that comes with the big muscles and the fit body, and you're healthy and stuff like that. But what does that mean deeper than that to you, to stay healthy, to stay vibrant, to stay physically capable as a father, a man, all these things?
Yeah, man, that's a great question. And for me, it's when I was younger, like in college, you know, just I was a bit of a meathead, but it was more about kind of just looking the part back then. I've always been like kind of physically just I've just always been physically, I guess, blessed, I would say. I don't know. Like, yeah. I was always like pretty strong, like growing up, even before I played sports. I was strong. I liked to like lift weights, doing that with my older brothers. And I always just kind of took to getting my hands on things and like making myself work. Then I got into college, and then most of my friends were like kind of in the fitness world, or they were, were on football team or whatever. We all worked out together and did all that stuff. So it always has been like a core piece of who I am, kind of like maintaining my confidence and just, making me feel, confident and able. And then as I got a little bit older, kind of getting out of college, the maturity came with it, where I just always wanted to be like able to do whatever I want to do. And since then, that's just the same track I've been on. It's like, I want to stay in physical form, where whether I want to go for a run, or I want to hop in the pool and swim, or I want to go hiking for a few hours, or I want to run around with my kids all day long. It was crazy when I was younger. I also used to think about it in terms of like survival. I'm like, somebody's chasing me and I can't fucking run away. Like, how thought was that, right? So I'd give myself these weird challenges when I was like going on a run and make it interesting. But yeah, I think it's just the core of who we are, right? It grounds you in discipline. It just makes you, it makes you someone who can show up for other people when I feel like you can show up for yourself. And if I'm not taking care of my own body, which is the only one I have, and I clock out early and leave my kids because I didn't want to take care of it, I look at that as like the ultimate failure. So I've tied it to like success in that way, to where I just know, even if I don't feel like getting after it, it's building me, molding me into the man I need to be for my family. So I don't really have a choice.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I talk about it all the time. It's the aesthetics of it, they're long gone. Like, I mean, obviously I want to look good and I want to be respected for being fit and all that stuff. But now the primary motivator, and I have put a lot of thought into this, and I'm sure you have too. Your kids are 6 and 1. How old are you, about 40?
41. Yeah.
Your kids and your 1-year-old in 30 years, you're going to be 71. And is your youngest a boy or girl?
Boy.
Okay. He might have kids. He might not, but he's going to want to say, "Dad, hey man, we're going out here for the weekend. We're going hiking up Mount whatever." And you're going to be 71 years old. And I think about this all the time. Am I going to be physically capable of doing that? And because that's what they want, that's what they need. And I owe it to my family to be physically capable as long as I can possibly be that way. And if I don't do the things now, eat right, exercise daily, do my things now, then I'm not going to be that way. And they're not going to be, they'll be proud of me in certain ways, but they're not going to be proud of the fact that I've let myself go and I'm not able to do those things. So that is kind of a game I play in my mind every day when I'm going through a hard workout or a hard run or just mentally trying to get myself in. Like, as soon as I get done with this podcast, my office is right next to the YMCA. I'm going over there to get on the treadmill. I don't want to do it. I'm tired, man. I've been on like back-to-back calls today, but I do it because 70-year-old me is going on that hike with my son and my daughter, right? And I could get hit by a bus tomorrow and none of that might be possible, but that's how I view everything. And I'm glad to hear it sounds like you're on the same path. So,
yeah, man, I love how you projected that far in the future, right? Even that, I look at them being like teenagers and us running around, but you look at 70, that's a driver, right?
Yeah, it is. And if we slip up now, it ain't gonna happen.
Yeah.
Once you hit your 50s and 60s, and that ship has sailed, it's very difficult to get it back without, like medically getting it back, and stuff like that. So Yeah, man. I always like to end on that, the family and the fitness part of this, because the business, none of that matters without the other stuff, right? And that's a backseat to the things that are most important, which are the ones that love you the most and the reason you're doing all the business stuff. So, I mean, I love your story, man. A lot of it I didn't know. I've gotten to know you pretty well, but not that in depth. So, and that's why I love these conversations
Yeah,
and
been awesome.
sharing it with folks. And I think a key, I made a ton of notes, but a couple key takeaways that I want folks listening to gather, and it's becoming a common theme with the guests that I have on, but success is not overnight, right? And it might seem like Tyrone, if for folks that go and follow you on social media, you're doing these daily posts or every so often kind of a day in the life, and it looks great and it looks glamorous. But you just laid out a timeline from back to 2005, 2008, and things have not been great, right? You have just been plowing through hurdle after hurdle, brick wall after brick wall, and here you are. And it goes back to what I say all the time. So many people, so many potential millionaires have given up right before a breakthrough because they just didn't grit through it. And thankfully for you and your family, you have never given up. And here you are, you've had your breakthrough, you're stabilizing things. And to your mother's point, you now own assets that are going to feed you for the rest of your life, right? So it's a great story, inspirational story. And the message is just keep going no matter where you are in this journey, right?
Just got to
Yeah.
keep going, man. And that, I think we mentioned earlier, it's like those lessons, you learn from them, and then you grow through them, and then you become the person who is capable of maintaining the success that you've built, right? So it's all good as long as you don't die, right?
Right, exactly.
Like all that, through the portfolio tightening up and every like, those were the greatest lessons. I wouldn't trade that for anything, right? And now we're in a place where we're moving faster along than we had before because we know what to do and we're focused on the right assets and those kind of things. But what if I build a massive portfolio and then that happened, right?
Yeah.
When the stakes are that much higher, right? And
Right.
so it's, I love everything you said, man. Great message, great takeaways. And I think, just embrace like what you have to go through to know that it's there to serve you, right? You just got to get through it.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, one last question that has nothing to do with any of this. Are you an Eagles fan? Okay, so you're flying high right now.
Yeah, man. There was this, yeah, we had a good year. We had a good year. And then I missed the Super Bowl parade because we were in Hawaii, but I won't complain about that.
That got chaotic from what I could see. So, but Tyrone, man, it's been a pleasure, man. I'm glad we finally connected. And like I said, it's been great for me to hear your story. And are you gonna make it to Napa the next Legacy event?
I'm 50-50, man.
Okay.
I hope to. And I want to bring my wife. She's actually going to Europe the week after that.
Okay.
So we are trying to figure out, both of those can happen. But
Yeah. Well,
I'm a
I'll definitely be there. I hope to see you. Hopefully we can, get a good workout in, have a drink, and have a good time. So,
Yeah, man.
but I really appreciate this, and I'm glad we got to catch up, and appreciate you joining us on Burning the Ships, my man.
Same here, bro. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure catching up, man. Always great to talk to you, and I look forward to it again.
Yes, sir. Take care.
All right, you too.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Burning the Ships. I want to give a special thanks to our sponsor, 608B Capital, helping real estate investors secure fast, reliable funding to fuel their boldest moves. If you're ready to take your investing to the next level, visit 608bcapital.com to learn more. If you found value in today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast. Your feedback not only helps us improve, but it also helps us reach more people who are ready to burn the ships and commit fully to their goals. And don't forget to share the episode with someone who needs that extra push to take bold action. I'll leave you with this. Burning the ships isn't just about removing the option to retreat. It's about unlocking the courage to charge forward. No matter the odds, the past is behind you and the future is yours to conquer. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time on Burning the Ships.